All I saw was a clip of Mehdi Hasan grilling him for not actually being a professor.
Some have called you China's Nostradamus. You had three famous predictions in 2024 that Trump would get elected, that he would start a war with Iran, and that he would lose a war with Iran.
Iran clearly has the strategic advantage. I think the next step in the escalation ladder is that Trump will send in ground forces.
Nikki Haley was key to your prediction about Iran. You said Trump would pick her as his running mate, but he didn't pick her.
I think that the problem with education is that it focuses too much on facts, too much on rigor, and not enough
too
on imagination.
Too much on facts, do you hear yourself? Does China control what you say now? Your critics might say they're using you as a propagandist.
It is possible I'm a useful idiot, and I suspect that there are many entities around the world who would like to amplify my message, including the Chinese government.
Hold on, hold on. You don't call yourself Professor Jiang on your YouTube channel.
I do now, but when I first started out, if you go way back to my early
lectures...
It
doesn't matter when you first started out. You do call yourself Professor Jiang, and you're not
the
a...
comments the Mehdi Jiang video crazy? Yeah, I keep seeing people say that. Is that true? Oh yeah, I guess so. Professor Jiang didn't even flinch. That was a tough interview. He did great. Professor Jiang actually handled the interview pretty well. Internet has accepted him as professor. That should be his title. But there aren't a whole bunch of dislikes? I don't know.
Professor,
might
what
be
is
body.
Your big prediction now for 2026? We'll see what happens. We can test it out at the end of the year. Back in 2024, Chinese-Canadian educator Shui-Chin Jiang posted a video on his YouTube channel, Predictive History, where he laid out three big predictions. Donald Trump would win the 2024 election, the U.S. would then go to war with Iran, and ultimately the U.S. would lose that war. Since then, the self-styled professor who says he uses game theory to analyze the past and predict future geopolitical events has become an internet sensation and has even been dubbed China's Nostradamus. But he's also faced some criticisms over his predictions and, many would say, pretty out there conspiracy theories. Two out of three of Jiang's big predictions have come true. But how much of that is his own geopolitical foresight and how much of it simply comes down to luck? How much does the Chinese...
The GCC nations...
I'm just going to skip that halfway through.
And one major issue about China's WTO entry, of course, is worker rights.
Professor Jiang is a kook and a grifter, so he's going to present himself in his most reasonable form when talking to someone like Mehdi Hasan, and when he's on his own channel talking about his own stuff, he's going to ramble about how Jesus committed suicide, or I don't know, how the Holocaust isn't backed by evidence or whatever.
And at this time in China, there was a major restructuring of the state-owned enterprise system. So I was dispatched to northeastern China to film a worker protest. Unfortunately, the place was swimming with police spies, and I was arrested and interrogated for 2 days. I was held incommunicado for 48 hours, which is the maximum by Chinese law. And I signed a confession saying that I was a reporter and working in China illegally as a reporter. And the decision was made to deport me without charging me with any crime. And so I was allowed to come back in the country, but I was deported. So that was the story.
If they suspect
you... Please tell me Mehdi destroys them. You can't destroy people like this in a conversation because the goalposts are always moving, you know? It's the same reason that debates with... Jordan Peterson were always a massive fucking waste of time.
Being a spy, how did they let you back in? China's not known for being that trusting.
They suspect me of being a spy, but after a 48-hour investigation, after learning and eschatology, then this gives you a pretty deep insight into how the world will turn out. And secret societies are very much an important aspect of eschatology.
I'll come back to secret societies. A couple of things you mentioned there. You said you were at Yale. Just to be clear, your degree was in English literature, was it not, at Yale? It wasn't in international relations or national security. You're an English lit graduate, and you're not a professor. I know it's your YouTube moniker, but you're a high school teacher. You're not actually a professor.
Right. So when I went to Yale, I was actually a math and physics major. I was declared a math and physics major, but the Yale English department was very strong, and so I switched majors. So I have both a math background as well as an English background. That's why my system of analysis can seem strange to people, because I'm combining a multidisciplinary approach to my thinking. going. And now we just focus on facts, on making sure that you can memorize all the elements of the periodic table, on making sure that
when when you talk about secret societies, I guess people want to say, well, where's the factual evidence? Where's the evidence? You said, I think, the Jesuits control the Vatican. First of all, there's nothing wrong with Jesuits. Good people. I know many of them. Second of all, there's only ever been one pope who's a Jesuit, and he's gone. So people would wonder, like, facts are important to your evidence. And people would say that it's not just fun and games when you're doing speculation on YouTube. They look at some of your rhetoric and they see that you don't just criticize Zionism or Israel, as many people legitimately do. You talk about this pretty far-right concept of Pax Judaica, a new world order centered around Israel. You have a video called Dawn of the Jews, in which you seek to answer the question, why is it that Jews are so dominant? Surely you understand why a lot of people think at best you're trafficking in pretty anti-Semitic tropes, and at worst, you're a card-carrying anti-Semite when they see that stuff.
Okay, well, that is a very strong accusation. So can you please tell me what specifically I've said that you find offensive?
This is why I knew he'd do this. It's such a waste of time because, like, he knows the reason he's backing off his position here, or like trying to back off making an evidentiary claim rather than just explaining what he believes, is because he knows that he panders to anti-Semitism. He just wants to, like, waste time by making Mehdi Hasan do all the work of substantiating a position where, like, over here in the real world, saying that we're entering into an age of Pax Judaica, everyone already knows that's anti-Semitic. Like, you don't have, like, you shouldn't need to say anything more. Mehdi Hasan has already laid the evidence forward.
When you do a video called Dawn of the Jews, why is it that Jews are so dominant? You don't find that offensive?
I never said Jews were dominant. What I said in my lecture was that the Jewish identity was created by the Persian Empire in order to better control the Levant. And if you read the Bible, that's exactly what you can derive from it. If you go to my lecture, Dawn of the Jews, you will see that I use the Bible as my primary source, and then I analyze what the Bible is saying. The problem is that most people don't read the Bible.
But by the way, that's not true. Really? Jews weren't created by the Persian Empire? Are you sure?
Who came up with Pax Judaica are not biblical scholars. They're the modern white supremacist far right.
Sorry. What is wrong with the term Pax Judaica?
You tell me. What does it
mean? See, before he was answering his questions calmly and concisely, well, maybe not concisely, but he was answering them directly. But now it's like, what do you mean by that? Definition. You can just explain exactly what you mean. If somebody accused me of being anti-Semitic and provided me with, like, quotes of stuff that I'd said, I could very easily explain without needing them to waste time waffling or explaining their terms or definitions. I could just explain what I believe.
It just means that there is an entity in the Middle East, Israel, that is able to dominate the Middle East, very much along the lines of Pax Americana, and Pax Britannica, and Pax
Magallica. But you didn't say Pax Israelica, you said Pax Judaica. That implies all Jews. You know the tropes about Jews running the world. I wouldn't be okay if you said Iran is dominant, Saudi Arabia is dominant, Pax Muslimica. In fact, you know that there are many racists in the West who do believe that Islam and Muslims are trying to take over the world. I find that equally offensive.
Right. So I'm using a Latin convention. And so the Latin convention would be Pax Judaica. It would not be Pax Israelica. I mean,
But you know where this concept comes from. It exists in far right.
It's literally like saying, like, if you had a term that involved the N-word, you'd be like, well, historically, they would have used the N-word.
Online circles. It's not some academic term.
Do you believe that the Greater Israel Project is a far right conspiracy theory?
No.
What is...
No, he's no longer answering questions directly. Also, for one, whether or not Greater Israel is a real thing has nothing to do with the use of the term Pax Judaica. And for two, many countries around the world envision a larger, like, what about Pax Sovietica, Pax Russica? Russia's literally taking territory in Ukraine right now. Like, the Russian sociopolitical doctrine, you know, the Duganist ideology literally involves, like, acquisition of Eastern Europe. But we don't talk about that, do we? No, we talk about Pax Judaica, and the only people using that term are, like, internet neo-Nazis.
I think it's a very real project being carried out by the Israeli government. I just don't call it Pax Judaica.
Right, okay. So the difference between the Greater Israel Project and Pax Judaica is this. Greater Israel Project is what the Israelis believe that Yahweh, their God, promised to their ancestor Abraham in the Bible. And this extends from the... now to the Euphrates. And I could have just used Greater Israel Project, but I want to differentiate because I believe that Pax Judaica is not an empire run by Jews for Jews by Jews. It is an empire run by transnational capital and secret societies in order to...
So by international capital, he means Jews. Why would you call it Pax Judaica otherwise? He just thinks that Jews are the secret societies and the money.
To create an AI surveillance state throughout the Middle East.
And this actually is, listen. Just to be clear, and this is speculative analysis. This is not based on facts, as you say.
So it is based on speculative analysis, based on history, historical patterns. It's also based on connecting the dots, because if you just look at what Netanyahu says, if you actually just go and watch on YouTube...
Notice how he completely evaded the point here. Why the fuck does that mean you'd call it Pax Judaica? Okay, so you want to make the point that the Greater Israel Project is the product of international capital, and to an extent there's an element of truth there. Why does that make it right to call it Pax Judaica? If anything, that's an argument against calling it Pax Judaica. If it's international capital, then now the majority of the people involved in this Greater Israel Project are non-Jewish. At least if you say Greater Israel, you're referring to a population that demographically is majority Jewish. So calling that Pax Judaica makes more sense than calling it Pax Judaica if you're referring to an international conspiracy. The average Zionist is non-Jewish. They're evangelical.
Netanyahu says, we're in agreement on how bad Netanyahu is, how expansionist is. I'm talking about the language you use, the milieu you're in. Let me ask you this before we wrap up. What are your own politics? Where do you place yourself on the political spectrum?
I believe I've always been on the left. So I believe that wealth redistribution is very important. I believe in freedom of speech. I am anti-war. I'm anti-empire. I believe in individual autonomy. And so, unfortunately, I used to be left, but I think that, given my preferences and given my politics, I believe most people would consider me on the far right nowadays.
Wow, it's like the same template grifter answer that I've heard from every guy on the right for the past decade. Incredible. It's just one for one, the exact same. Phenomenal. Every right-wing grifter, the left left me, exactly. I believe in free speech, and that used to be the left position, but now only the far right believes in free speech. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. Last question. You made three very famous predictions in 2024. What is your big prediction now for 2026? We'll see what happens. We can test it out at the end of the year.
Well, I've made three predictions about how this war will progress. Okay. So my first prediction is that the United States will use ground troops.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I'm with you.
And I believe that this ground troops will be a quagmire for the United States, and that they will have to call up a national draft. Okay. That's my first prediction.
Okay.
My
second national draft. Okay.
Prediction. And this is very important, is that Israel and the United States will not use a nuclear weapon in this war. I think that the talk of nuclear weapons is fear-mongering. I don't think we will escalate to that point of nuclear weapons.
I hope you're right. I worry about nukes. I hope you're right.
And my third and most controversial prediction is that I believe that during the course of this war, somehow, some way, the Al-Aqsa Mosque will be destroyed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a disaster. God forbid. We will have to leave it there on that rather dark prediction. Shui Qin Jiang, I appreciate you taking time out. I appreciate you taking my questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Did you like this video?
Not terribly. Yeah, I just don't find the Professor Jiang stuff that interesting. It's just, to me, it's the same manufactured, cultivated grifter language that I've seen in so many other people. Jordan Peterson, Stefan Molyneux, there's so many versions of this guy. I guarantee you that in a year, nobody's going to be talking about him. These people only hit the height for as long as they're able to maintain that buffer of plausible deniability. But after a point, they fail too many predictions. They make too many mistakes. They get too crazy, and then people stop caring. Same for all the rest of them. Same for Dave Rubin. Same for Lauren Southern. Same for Milo Yiannopoulos. Same for Stefan Molyneux. Same for Jordan Peterson. It's always like that. It's always the same. Very boring. What about Candace Owens? Candace Owens successfully rebranded herself. But keep in mind, the Candace Owens of today basically only exists in contrast to her work for the Daily Wire. She very intelligently rebounded. But she went from being, her job was the token, the Black Republican, Democratic plantation. But she once that started to die down, she successfully pivoted and turned her career into hardline anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist. I worked at Daily Wire. I lived under the oppressive heel of the Jew, so on and so forth. Charlie Kirk, Charlie Kirk, Charlie Kirk. She was able to rebrand herself,